Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Bros Pod is, of course, brought to you by BetOnline. It's down to the last four teams. BetOnline has been your tournament bracket headquarters all March long, and now that we're almost down to the finals, we've still got a lot more in store. Major League Baseball is here, and NBA and NHL playoffs are right around the corner. As always, BetOnline is your number one source for your summer sports wagering. So head to BetOnline today to stay updated on all the action, and remember to use promo code BELEAV, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here.
Everybody, welcome to another version of Bill Roden on Sports. I'm Bill Roden, holding it down. I will say I'm in a disclosed location. I'm out in Arizona, Glendale, Arizona, at the men's Final Four, although the epicenter of college basketball is in Cleveland, of all places, at the women's Final Four. We'll talk about that later. I'm here with my friend and my co-host, the great Jamal Murphy. Murph, what's going on?
Hanging in there, Bill. You know, just recovering from last night's controversial offensive illegal screen call, but you know, other than that, I'm good.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We've got a longtime friend of the show and special guest, great coach Kyle Dudley. You know, Kyle is he's joined us from Salisbury, where he's wrapping up a great career at Salisbury as a head basketball coach, history instructor, tennis coach, and he's recently named the girls varsity basketball coach at Trevor Day School in Manhattan. So congratulations.
Back in New York City, baby.
Back to New York.
Thank you, guys. Always great to be on with you, Bill and Jamal, and excited to be in New York City full time and to see you guys in person. And yeah, hopefully you guys will come see you know, my new team play at Trevor Day School.
Definitely.
What's that school you're talking about, Jamal?
Yeah, do you play Nightingale by any chance?
I believe they're on the schedule.
Okay, because I my friend coaches their girls' team, so that would be great. I have to come to that game. That's what I'm
thinking. Yeah. So why don't we start off with this, Kyle? I mean, when you first got the gig I know that you've always been a big follower of women's basketball, And now you're right in the main pipeline. I mean, I don't know how many of your kids will go to places like South Carolina, but, you know, women's basketball has really exploded. I mean, it's kind of the place to be, developing young talent. So what are your plans? I mean, what is it about the women's game? Before we ask you about that bogus call last night, what is it about the women's game that's always excited you?
Yeah, I mean, I've really enjoyed the women's game since I was a kid. Like, Shamika Holdsclaw was like my favorite player growing up, just in the late 90s and winning all those championships at Tennessee and starting that dynasty. And, I think the game, right now is obviously in a great place, and people are watching, and the ratings and viewership are great. I love just the rivalries and the storylines in the women's game right now. You had the rematch of the national championship with Iowa and LSU. Now you have the rematch of the semifinal game in which Iowa ended South Carolina's undefeated season last year. You have some incredible freshmen like Juju Watkins and Hannah Hidalgo. So I just think, the storylines are great. The competition, like the games are close. Like Iowa in the second round, it was a tie game with 2 minutes to go against West Virginia in the 1-8 game. Like, there's been so many just close games that go down to the wire. And then, the star players have been, returning, like Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, who were there last year and now are back again this year. So, I mean, I've always, enjoyed the women's game, and I think it's a great place now. And I've always coached on the boys' side, whether in college, at Middlebury or at Salisbury. And I'm excited for, my first opportunity to coach girls and to teach girls and in co-ed in the classroom. I'm really excited for the opportunity. And like you said, I think it's a great time to be entering, coaching, girls basketball because of all the, the excitement that's happening right now.
And you're also going to be teaching history, right, at in your new gig.
Correct.
Yeah, that's great. Nice.
Let me ask you, have you talked to any coaches who coach women or girls about any differences between, coaching boys basketball and girls basketball? Are there any differences that you can tell?
That's a great question. And, I've spoken to quite a few people about this. I think I will speak to more coaches who have maybe coached on both sides this summer as I prepare. It's funny, like one of the things that some people say is that, when you draw up a play or you call a play on the girl side, they will execute it, to a T. They will run, every single screen, and they will run every action that you're calling in that play, where the boys tend to maybe improvise a little bit more. Like, I we were in the play, but then, I thought I could just take my man to the basket. So, I think, so we'll see if that is true. But that's one thing I've heard a lot is just in terms of, the execution and the sort of, listening to the details and, everything you're asking for on the offensive and defensive end. A lot of people have said that the girls really, listen and look to execute, to the last detail, maybe a little bit more so than the boys.
That's funny. That is funny. I can see that. Let's jump to, we're speaking a night after the game you referenced, UConn, Iowa. Great game. I mean, it really was a great game, very riveting. And then, of course, it ended on a call. Now, you've coached. Jamal and I, we sit up here like and just kind of like, talk trash. But you've right. been as a coach, whether you were at Middlebury, whether you were at Salisbury. Now, you've been on the sideline, and you've seen that call. You've probably been on both sides of that call, the screen call. So what did you think? I mean, to me, I was thinking, well, if you love Iowa, you love the call.
Right.
You don't love the call. What did you think as a basketball coach?
I did not like the call, and I hear the argument in terms of, you know, don't call it in the last part of the game, but you know, I think if it is a very clear cut, you know, foul at the end of the game, you still need to call it. I just think, was it textbook definition? Was it a moving screen? You know, probably. Is it a screen that probably goes uncalled many times throughout the game? I would say probably. I felt like Gabby Marshall, you know, was pretty much able to get through the screen, and I know UConn had been called for some moving screens earlier in the game, but I felt like that was one that probably goes uncalled a lot. So I didn't like the call. Didn't think it should have been called there, and would have liked to see UConn get a shot there. But I mean, I think UConn had their chances. They were up as much as 12 in the game, and yes. Let Iowa kind of, you know, and then Iowa almost gave it back at the end. But
yeah, I know.
The missed free throw. They didn't get the rebound.
Yeah, they didn't block out. Yeah, that's one of those calls. What's the sign that Luca? And what's the guy? What's the sign that makes
the money sign?
The money sign. You know, they make the money sign at the ref when there's a bad call, inferring that this was a gambling call. You know, that's one of those calls, because I think somebody texted me, said, "Oh, they must really want Iowa to win." I don't know. Yeah. I mean, maybe I don't know if, like, in the moment, you're an official, you say, "Oh, you know, I'm in the betting pool, so I don't want."
Hopefully not. Hopefully not. But that's the reason why I think you don't make those. Like, there is people say, "Oh, you know, if you call that in the first 3 minutes of the game, you got to call it in the last 3 seconds of the game." I don't agree with. I mean, that's just naive to me. But like, you know, you don't make the same calls. Like, you might in the beginning of a game, you might make a call to try to set the tone of the game. You know, if you're an official, you don't do that at the very end of the game. Unless it's an obvious, blatant call in that situation. You let it play out. She might have missed, you know, and like when Caitlin Clark had she had an offensive foul, they let go. They didn't call that. There are a lot of, you know, so I think at the very end, you know, it has to be an obvious call for at least for an illegal screen type of call. Now, if she had if someone had the ball and it's a foul on the shooter, okay. If any kind of, you know, if you touch the shooter in any way, I get that kind of call. But an off the ball call to end the game that's suspect, that just doesn't look good.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what Dawn Staley says, you know, about that. Because if that's the tone that they're going to call, if they're going to start calling, not making the game physical, that doesn't, you know, pretend well with her. You know, I want to mention, Kyle, since you've last been on the show, I think you've been on the show since you were a coach at Middlebury. I think you've been on the show at Salisbury. But since then, you've gotten married. I think, you got married. You and Ayana got married. I think, you're almost coming up in your second year, right?
Yeah. Our second anniversary will be, this September. This might be the first time I've been on the show since I've
been remiss. And then you were recently in Ghana. You took a nice trip to Ghana. So I'm sure you got all pissed off again seeing Cape Coast Castle and, that whole thing. So what are your, before we get into like stroll down memory lane, tomorrow is a championship game, South Carolina and Iowa. What do you think we can expect?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to get a great game. I think it's going to be, incredibly close. I think Dawn Staley, who was obviously at the game, should look at what Gino Auriemma did in terms of especially how he guarded Caitlin Clark in that first half, you know, when she was, you know, 3 for 11 and, didn't hit a three in the first half for the first time in her career in an NCAA tournament game. And how they were just denying her all over the court, making it tough for her to just catch the ball. They did an outstanding job, holding a team that averages 90 a game to 25 in the first half. So, you know, I think there was a lot there that Dom Staley could, you know, could look at and implement. I'm curious to see what Dom Staley does in terms of strategy, because they lost that game last year. And, you know, I wonder if there's some strategic things that maybe she wished she had done differently that now she maybe has that opportunity to do now. But yeah, I think, you know, UConn gave a great, you know, kind of clinic on how to guard Clark, especially in that first half. And if Cardoza can just do a better job on Hannah Stolke than UConn did, you know, that could be a great recipe for South Carolina to, you know, to win this game and finish the undefeated season.
Yeah. Do you see that happening? Who do you got?
I think it's going to be South Carolina in a close win. I mean, I'm not really a gambler, but I probably it's a stay away for me because, you know, bet against Caitlin Clark, that could always come back to haunt you. For you guys, I mean, the storylines are amazing. You know, Caitlin Clark, her last game, can she end it with a national championship, or can South Carolina end their season with an undefeated season and Dawn Staley's, you know, third national championship and really taking that, you know, into that next class of coaches? So, I mean, the storylines, you know, couldn't be better.
Yeah. I mean, there are two things I'm thinking about. A, are officials going to let South Carolina do what UConn did? You know, because when you deny, you know, that's the thing about basketball, I guess any sport, you know, you could call the game. It's like enforcing the law. You know, they're like, you know, Jamal, you know, they're like hundreds of thousands of laws on the book. And at any given time, like that illegal screen, at any given time, you could call them. Like, how many times have we walked across the street and jaywalked in the middle? And technically, if somebody wanted to stop you, the policeman wanted to stop you and give you a citation because you know, particularly in New York, you know, nobody ever waits for the light to cross. I mean, you just, if no cars coming, you cross. I remember I was with a friend of mine, and we were crossed right here in Phoenix, you know, and Phoenix is like a red state, purple. And, you know, we kind of crossed against the light. And one of the officials was like, all right, get back now, you know. And so that's a long-winded way of asking, when you talk about how they guarded Caitlin Clark, how concerned would you be if you're Dawn Staley? So are they going to let us play like that? Are they going to let us play physical against Caitlin Clark? Or are they going to pull that nonsense of fouling out all our kids, you know, fouling out our guards, fouling out our center?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and just from the coaching perspective, you always have to be able to adjust to how the game is being officiated. So it's not an excuse. You know, if they're letting them play a little bit more, you know, physical, then, you know, I think South Carolina has to, you know, embrace that, and that's an advantage. But if they're not, you know, South Carolina has to adjust. I think they can win this game, you know, even if there is a tighter whistle, you know, and I think they just have to be able to execute their strategy and make it tough on Caitlin Clark, as tough as you can within how the game is being officiated. I think it's a great thing to look out for, Bill, in terms of how the game is being officiated. But it's, yeah, like I said, it's not an excuse. You got to be able to adjust to how the game is being officiated and be able to, you know, execute accordingly.
Now, I know you have places to be, things to do. Do you have to get out of here?
Yeah, I mean, I got, you know, if there's one more, I got maybe 2 minutes. So if there's one more question.
Let me ask you about the other hot button topic that encapsulated the women's tournament, which was the LSU not being able to you know, repeat as champions. They lose to Iowa. What did you take from that game, and what did you think about the aftermath in terms of Angel Reese, what she had to say about how she's been treated?
Yeah, I mean, loved watching the game. You know, a great game, and you know, Iowa I mean, you know, just really had an incredible second half. You know, in that first quarter, it looked like LSU maybe had some advantages that might they might really be able to take advantage of, particularly in the paint and on you know, dominating the boards. You know, as soon as the bracket came out, right, we all circled that game. And
right, we knew that was coming.
Yep, and it lived up to the hype. And I'm a big Angel Reese fan, and I do think, you know, the way she's treated, you know, she has sort of a lot of people in the media have painted her as a villain. And you've seen columns like the one from the, you know, LA Times that, you know, that portrayed the whole team as sort of, you know, the enemy or evil. And I think a lot of that was probably directed at Angel Reese. You know, she's a trash talker, like many athletes are in men's and women's sports.
Right.
You know, and I think it adds to the game when you back it up and you win. And you know, you may let the opponent know, just like Caitlin Clark does. So yeah, I mean, you know, I do think, you know, there are, you know, the way she's treated and just, you know, being a Black woman, I think does have, you know, plays a part in it. And I think it's unfortunate, you know, how, you know, they've been, portrayed and how she's been portrayed as a villain. But I think she's a great player. I think she's great for the sport and looking forward to seeing her in the WNBA.
Yep.
What was your take on just how, you know, Angel Reese was being treated and everything?
What about you, Bill?
Well, no, I mean, I thought it awful. I mean, thank God for the LA Times column, because it was like a perfect, I wrote a column in response to it. It was almost too easy because it was just so blatantly racist and misogynistic and thoughtless. And we have that combination of thoughtless, racist, and misogyny. It's like you could just, it's like a gimme. You could just pin them to the wall. But yeah, I thought it was very unfortunate. But Angel Reese, you know, this is making her a lot of, it's making her a lot of money. You know,
that's true.
Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark are making each other a lot of money. You know, and it's just, you know, but, you know, one thing, and I know you got to go and we'll let you go, Kyle. When you come back, I'd like to talk to you about the transfer portal. And because that's going to be one of the things where I'm writing about. And is it having a corrosive effect on education? Because you've got, you know what the transfer portal has been. It's been kind of like the Wild West where guys, you know, you tell them some of your players, you know, they're pissed off at you. The next thing you know, they're transferring. So, I know you're very heavy on education. So next time you come back, I'd like to have a conversation with you about, you know, your thoughts on the transfer portal and what it's doing to education and that kind of stuff. But I know you got to run, man. So thank you so much. Who are you liking the men, by the way, before we let you out of here?
Yes, don't forget the men now.
I know. Don't forget the men.
I love the story of NC State, hoping they can pull it off. But I do think that UConn is going to repeat, you know, like they haven't even played a close game in the NCAA tournament since it's last wild. Year, this year. Like no one can even get into single digits. So, right. I mean, it's hard to think, you know, anyone's going to take them down. So I do think that they're going to repeat. You know, thank you for having me on. I look forward to that discussion about the transfer portal. As a prep school coach, I've seen sort of the effects of the transfer portal all too much, just how it's affected, you know, prep school recruiting and high school recruiting, because college coaches, you know, would much rather build their team with players who are, you know, have played college basketball for 2 years or 3 years and can go to the transfer portal. And I think it's had also a massive effect on prep school recruiting. So that's another angle of the portal, as well as the ones that you said. But I do have to go. The class is awaiting me here in 5 minutes. My last class of the day. So. Hey,
well, just tell them you were talking to Bill Roden. Okay, it'll all be fine.
Well, in one of my classes, that would actually go over well because we actually read $40 million slaves in my class. but this isn't that class. So they won't know what I say on the podcast with sports.
Hey, thank you so much, Kyle, and
yes, thank you
again. We're gonna have you back soon. But go teach. Educate the people.
Yes, yes.
Thank you, guys, and great seeing you as always. Take care.
Take care.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Yes, that was great. Kyle Dudley, he's winding down a great career at Salisbury Prep School in Connecticut and headed to the Trevor Day School in Manhattan. So that'll be great. And right where he wants to be, coaching young girls, and that's kind of the epicenter of everything.
Yeah.
You were saying that you were even seeing that. I know you got 2 sons playing flag football, but you've seen it even at the you do the other podcast where you focus on youth sports, and you've even seen their transition to women, even in terms of who's getting funded, the AAU teams and all that, right?
Yeah, it seems to be all sports, definitely basketball and flag football, like you mentioned. Flag football, NFL flag football, they're making a big push, not just for co-ed teams, but for all girls flag football teams. And you know, they're willing to, you know, to finance some of that if you are, you know, especially when it comes to all girls programs. So I see a lot of the flag programs kind of, you know, creating all girls teams, you know, for that purpose. And the same thing, AU basketball, where a lot of times with shoe companies, whether they'll sponsor you now depends on if you have a girls program, you know, so these companies are trying to, you know, promote the girls sport.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm curious to find out, and this is part of another show, you know, with all these DEI programs under attack from right wingers, if you will have the same type of attack on programs that are favoring women, you know, because a lot of these right wing people, you know, have daughters, you know,
right, that's the difference. Right?
So will there be the same kind of viciousness when it comes to wiping out anything that helps women, or will they try to walk that tightly? No, we just want to harm anything that helps black people. We want to wipe that out. Not women, because too many of our daughters are benefiting from that.
Yeah, no, I think there'll be a difference. You know, I think you'll have some wild, you know, crazy sexists who still have a problem with that, of course. But yeah, it won't be as much as the DEI pushback. And I was thinking about that like yesterday. I was like, okay, DEI, right? So it means diversity,
equity
and inclusion, right? So you're anti-diversity, you're anti-equity, and you're anti-inclusion. Okay. I mean, you know, it's easy to, when you put it in the, you know, when you use the initials of these words, it's easy to say, oh, you know, I hate DEI. But if you break it down, okay, you don't like diversity, you want no diversity, you want no inclusion, you know, you want no equity. Okay. Just say, just walk around saying that, because that's what it is. You want an all white, you know, as it's been forever. You know, yeah. I think we need to, you know, to be on the offensive with this. With, you know, everybody, they're on the offensive with, oh, no DEI. So how about we say no, you know, no average white people running everything for as it's been forever. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't, like, we need to go on the offensive.
Well, that's exactly what they're saying. T- to the extreme. They're saying, yeah, this is a white, this has been a white man's Christian country and has gone too far to the left. We want to pull it back to that. Yeah, so do we want diversity? No.
No, not none. None.
Inclusion? No.
No, none.
Do we want equity? No.
No, none.
So you're right, Jamal Murray. When you say, yeah, no, we don't want diversity. We don't want inclusion. We don't want, we want it to be all white. Right. The only flip, we want it to be all white men, and to appease women, women. So we'll let the women, you know, we'll let our white women get right in on this too. So and they will be part, you know, yeah.
It's, I mean, like,
so
DEI, you know, you're anti-DEI, but you have your own DEI for hundreds of years. Like, right. So we need to express that. Like, we need to come up with, we need an acronym, you know, for what it's been for 200 years. And say, oh, we hate that, you know?
Right. Well, we're not studying history either. You know, oh, there you go again with the 200 years stuff. Come on. You know, that happened 200 years. It wasn't my, you know.
Right. That's true.
Let me tell them about, like I was looking at $40 million slave. It's like, oh, come on, man. You know, Jesus Christ. Talking about something that happened, Jack Johnson. That was night. Come on! Yeah, I was listening to Frank Izzola, who I really like. Frank is a friend and a lot.
Yeah.
But they're on this thing about Jokic. They're still on this thing about Jokic and how, you know, anybody who's questioning him or whatever. You know, I mean, it's like, I think even you may mention even last year when I was talking about, you know, the Great White Hope thing, and like, you know, clearly he's great. You know, and normally when you have these white athletes, they're not the ones who are formating this. If Caitlin Clark isn't really talking, you know, she's not doing that. Jokic isn't doing that. It's usually our friends who are in the media. They're the ones who are like going overboard with this stuff. You know, that it's not just enough for these white athletes, particularly white athletes competing in sports known, you know, to be kind of dominated by black athletes.
Right.
When you do have a white athlete, that's where you see it a lot, and it's just going overboard, you know. And I'm wondering, even in the women's game, they're talking about how popular it is. Well, it just so happens, it's really popular now because you got Caitlin Clark and Paige Beckers. And I'm wondering, you know, going forward, once they're gone, will there be the similar? If black stars emerge, will they be as legendary? And I'm sure people say, well, if they do legendary stuff, yes, right. I don't know, you know.
No, I was wondering that too. Like, let's say this championship was LSU, South Carolina. Would it do the numbers that the Iowa games or the UConn games were doing? I'm not sure. Right. I'm sure, you know, I think the sport has been uplifted enough to the point where those numbers would be higher than usual. But I just wonder to what extent, you know, as compared to, you know, Iowa, Caitlin Clark, because remember, she's not going to be here next year.
Exactly.
You know, so will things stay the same? And, you know, luckily for the college basketball, Paige Beckers is returning at UConn, so we'll see.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Juju Watkins, I mean, you know, I guess, you know,
in commercials. And, yeah. And you know, Hannah Hidalgo, you know, we didn't get to it, but, you know, when they had to take the nose ring out, you know.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, there's a part of me, again, it's one of these things like the call on Aaliyah Edwards. You know, they've been letting her play with the ring nose all season and probably for a quarter of that game. And then all of a sudden, and I got to think that if somebody from the bench, from the other side, from Oregon State, saying, come on, she's got the, you know, aren't you going to enforce the nose ring? You know, one of the officials, once somebody brings it to your attention, you got to do it. You know, you got to.
Right. And what's the purpose of that? I mean, it's dangerous to who?
I don't know. I mean, what, remember, that's one of these, again, these NCAA rules about jewelry. So, you know, the NCAA, again, trying to impose, as it sees control slipping away, you know, let's grasp anything where we can control these young people. And particularly these black young people, you know, no jewelry, you know, who's that affect?
Right. So,
anyway, what else we got? We got anything else where we wrap up on this Saturday morning?
I mean, you know, just to finish off the women's tournament, which is, you know, the championship on Sunday, South Carolina, Iowa. What do you think? What do you think it means here for South Carolina, for Dawn Staley? Her legacy in quotes. What do you think it means?
Yeah. Well, I think for her, you know, if she wins this, it'll be her third. Because, you know, I think with Dawn, you know, and again, it always fits into that same kind of racist motif. Well, you know, she's not really an X's and O's person, you know. So I think even this game is what's the name? Lisa
Caitlin Clark. The Iowa coach.
Is she going to outcoach? Will she outcoach Dawn Staley again? You know.
Right.
But I think that if Dawn Staley wins her third title, I mean, you got Gino Auriemma, who's at another planet.
Right.
But then if you look at, well, who's second?
Right.
You know, in terms of women's coaches, you know, Pat Summitt, Kim Mulkey. I think Kim Mulkey has, I believe she has three.
Vanderveer, right, from Stanford. Yeah,
Vanderveer, Stanford. So I think that with this, if she wins, if Dawn Staley wins this title, a third title, you know, and if you look at that team, you know, and it's a team of all transfers for the most part, except for one.
Right.
You know, she's probably well positioned to win a fourth and a fifth.
Right. I mean, think about what she's doing now. I mean, you got to be some kind of coach to go have back-to-back undefeated teams.
Right.
You know, reaching the final or the final four. And it's not like they come from some small league. They're playing everybody in the regular season. So it's not like these are flukes that they're showing up undefeated and this far into the season. I mean, that in itself is wild.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, to take a team of all transfers and then mold them into a group. And I think South Carolina is becoming probably, for the women, what Georgetown used to be with John Thompson.
Right.
Where a lot of young players want to play there. Young black players want to play for Dawn Staley. Like a lot wanted to play for John Thompson. You know. And she's becoming – She has become that kind of stature.
Right.
And I think something like this will only build on that stature. So from that standpoint, I'm pulling for her to win, because of everything we talked about, the assault on DEI, which is assault on Black people, which is something that's unending. It's like a constant, you know, it's just a constant undercurrent of our existence. No matter what Clarence Thomas, the Clarence Thomas wing of Black folks, you know, that whole group, you know, what they say, you know.
Right. I saw a good tweet from someone yesterday. You know, we had the earthquake in New York, and someone tweeted, "I'm waiting for them to blame the earthquake on DEI. That's coming soon."
Right. Well, somebody was saying they were talking about something about even they were trying to blame DEI on the bridge collapse in Maryland, the Key Bridge.
I know they were blaming the mayor because he's black. I think this is perfect. This is perfect for racists, man. You know, they can blame everything on DEI. It's just great, you know, whatever it is. They don't have to say, you know, you can be, you know, these little terms and stuff, and they allow you to avoid saying what you really want to say, and you could just say DEI. You know,
and what's the other one? What's the other one? Teaching wokeness and
wokeness. Yeah, wokeness.
What's the other one? Critical race theory.
It's the new. It's the easier because critical race theory.
And
that's harder to say. The DEI is just like a dream come true for these people. You know, DEI. I guarantee you. 80% of people screaming it on Twitter or whatever, talking about DEI, they don't even know what it stands for.
It means it helps Black people.
Right.
Because I saw somebody out, I think it was Utah or South Dakota, or one of those states out there, you know, they passed something about the language. You can't use a certain kind of language, DEI, like, and the guy was saying, we just believe in hard work, and that's another code. That's another code word.
Right.
You know,
right.
Hard work. And dedicate, you know, which means that when you say quote DEI, that's antithesis of hard work. You're just giving stuff like white people have been giving stuff, you know.
That's what I'm saying. Like that, you're complaining about DEI. Like you've had your own DEI forever, and right. that's really what you're fighting. You're just fighting so you can be given things that you didn't earn. You know, like that's what you have, and that's what you don't want affected. Right.
We don't want anybody else to get unearned privilege. You know,
those are just for us. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah. We deserve those unearned privileges.
Yeah, that's another thing. Somebody got in trouble for using, I forget what she was, privilege. She was sanctioned because she used the term privilege.
Sanctioned.
And that's another word you can't use. Because again, it's describing an ongoing condition that has created the inequity. You know, you can't use privilege, you know. So it's really... We're in, you know, and with the election coming down. I just hope that the NBA, the WNBA, the NFL, anywhere with a large concentration of black people, they could use whatever visibility they've got to keep Donald Trump out of the White House. Whatever, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, use your platform to stop this. Because if you think it's terrible now, the stuff we're talking about, wait until it all becomes law. Like everything becomes law, you know.
And so, it's right around the corner. It's right around the corner.
Yeah. Well, on that happy note, brother, you know.
But before we go, So we talked South Carolina, Iowa. That's going to be a great one. Men's side, you got UConn tonight. You got Purdue, NC State, UConn, Alabama. Kind of, you know, two kind of mismatches, you know, on paper. You know, in the semifinal, and then you have two teams who are the best in the country in terms of Purdue and UConn. Everybody's kind of looking for that matchup in the final. I think that, you know, most likely that's what will happen. And then UConn, you know, as Kyle said, I mean, they've just been so dominant in the tournament. Like, it's not like they were this dominant. I mean, they were very good, and you know, you could say they dominated the regular season, but not to this extent. You know, right. In the Big East, they weren't winning every Big East game by, you know, 15 points at a minimum. So it's just really been against non-conference teams in this tournament. They've just been killing them. And not only have they won every game by 13 points or more, they've been up in every game this year. At some point, they've been up by 30 against everybody they've played. you know, which is just it's just a crazy statistic. And Danny Hurley, who's a friend of the show, you know, couple times said, you know, how much he told me how much he loves Bill Roden. He has a chance to get his second straight, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Danny Hurley becomes one of the best coaches
I know
ever.
How many times? I guess because you had that dominance under Jim Calhoun, I guess I gotta look back and find out how many NCAA titles did Calhoun win.
I think he won. Four or five.
He's won a bunch of them. Jim Calhoun's won a bunch of them. So now Danny Hurley, which I think is pretty amazing. A school like UConn,
yes,
you know, that's otherwise kind of out there, is now becoming this. They were already a dynamo in basketball,
right?
Then it became one of better, and now Hurley is leading a second empire.
Bill Roden's the best.
What was that?
This is Danny Hurley.
Bill Roden's the best.
One more time. Yeah,
say that again.
What'd you say, Danny? What'd you say?
Bill Roden's the best.
We love Danny Hurley. Go UConn. Go UConn.
Yeah. So, you know. I will say,
I found something. I was looking at Edie, who's a two-time player of the year, and I read his mother is Chinese American.
Yeah.
You know, which I didn't realize that, you know. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, he's a person of color. One of them saying that's DEI. You know, there's something.
Yeah. They don't like that either, Bill. I mean, they might be able to accept it a little more than, you know, if it's a black person, but they don't like that either.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll let that slide because we hate them so much.
They like pitting people to, you know, against each other. That's a major tactic.
Yeah, but it was kind of fascinating to see that. All right, well, next go around, we'll talk about the WNBA. I mean, the NBA, which playoffs begin later this month. And what did you think before we, you know, Bronny LeBron James' son,
right,
did two things at once. He put himself in the transfer portal, but also declared for the NBA draft, right, which is weird.
Well, I would say that they all, I was telling, you know, friends of mine too, because they brought that up. They all do that. Like, so whenever a kid who has any, even the kids who have no chance at NBA, which some people would say Bronny fits into that, but right, even, you know, a lot of kids who don't have any NBA prospects, they always will put their name into the draft just in case, at the same time keeping their college eligibility and going into the portal, right? So it's like, so now, you know, this thing is evolving, the transfer portal, but now it seems as every kid who is entering the transfer portal is also, you know, putting their name in the NBA hat just in case, you know, and I'm sure they all, and they all have agents who are telling them to do that. So I don't, so that was not unusual what he did. Now, the unusual part is what, you know, we'll see whether he actually has some, you know, NBA teams interested in him. And I've said all along, just watching his game, like, you can see he has potential, but, you know, at his size, he's a great defender. He's about 6'2", 6'3", but he's not a pure point guard. He's proven he can shoot. So to me, you stay in college, you can transfer, go to a system that fits you, that where you're going to play, and just develop those point guard skills. Become a pure point guard. Play the point guard position for a year. How about that?
Right.
And and then, you know, he's obviously, his stock will always be a little higher than it should be because of who his father is. Right. But just at least get to the point where it's undeniable that you're pretty good. How about that?
Right. Yeah. So that's it. You know, yeah. So transferring from USC, I'm wondering if LeBron, you know, because LeBron's in LA, I'd like you to be in LA, so I'll go to USC.
Right.
Then he'd be like, well, it's not the quite fit there, so we're going to move. So I wonder where he goes from here. If he stays in college, does he play for Shaka Smart?
Well, there are rumors out there because LeBron's former high school coach was coaching at Duquesne. And then he retired from Duquesne this year. Duquesne actually made the tournament this year and won a game. And the assistant coach taking over is one of LeBron's good friends. Okay, so there's been rumors that maybe he'll go to Duquesne because he'll play for a good friend of LeBron's. So that's a possibility. Also, USC situation was weird too because their coach Andy Enfield,
right?
He basically ran away from, like, they didn't even fire him. He left to take the SMU job, a lesser job. He got out of there, but now they hired Eric Musselman from Arkansas, who is kind of like, I mean, he has done big things in the sport before, gets teams to the Elite Eight and all that kind of stuff, runs a very fast-paced game. He gets a lot of recruits. People love to play for him. So I'm thinking it's a possibility that Bronny could change his mind and go back to USC. That's always on the table.
Yeah. How hard is it, do you think, to coach, to be in that situation with LeBron breathing down your neck? You know,
that's the thing, too.
I mean, like, damn, even if it's Musselman, you know, and you can't really tell – Bronny the truth, because you got LeBron and his truth, you know.
Right. But a guy like Musselman, who's known to be like, he's always seeking out attention, right? When he was at Arkansas, he wins a game, he's taking his shirt off, you know what I'm saying? And in the crowd, and, like, you know, he's all about attention. So you're coming into your first year, you're trying to rebuild a program. I think he would love to have Bronny just to be able to attract other recruits, maybe to attract the attention and money and donors. I think he made a comment. Someone asked him about, you know, Bronny, and he said, "Hey, I would love to get in touch with him, Bronny. You're welcome here, baby."
Right.
You know, and I'm sure he'll let him play point guard. You know,
especially
your first year. I mean, you have nothing to lose. So
right, yeah, you tell the rest of the recruits, listen, come on, let's be real about this. You know? You got to know.
And, but the great thing about Bronny, though, if you do that, and the kid, like, he's innately unselfish. You know, he's got, you know how LeBron is unselfish as a player. Bronny's probably even more unselfish because he's not the physical force that his father is, you know what I'm saying, offensively. So he's like, he really is unselfish. He's willing to do whatever. He passes the ball, has a high basketball IQ. I mean, he's actually a good player. You're right. You add all that LeBron factor and the hoopla, depending on what school you are, it might not be good for you. It's like you already have a good team or something like that, you might not need all that. But I actually think he's a good player with potential. That's the sad thing.
Yeah, he's a good player. And that's why if his father was not LeBron James, and you're just kind of analyzing him, but he is LeBron James. That's always, how do you turn that into a positive? I guess you're right. Musselman might be able to take that and turn it into a plus. But for the guy who left, he said, man, I'm done with this. I can't.
I'd love to hear that story. I need to look into that. Because I mean, he was out of there, you know?
Yeah, I said, no way. I mean,
they had a terrible season. They had more talent than, you know, they had one of the top kids in the country as a freshman there. They had other guys. So they were supposed to be a lot better. They were supposed to be a tournament team, and they weren't even close.
You see, LeBron was talking to the president of the university, and this guy got to go, you know.
Who knows?
All right.
Who knows? That's what we got. Semifinal.
How did flag football practice go?
It went pretty well. It went pretty well. It was a little cold out there. You know, just running drills. My little one, you know, I had to curb a couple of meltdowns, but it was good.
Yeah, he's quite the competitor, man. You know, Kareem is very, you know, chill and low key. And his younger brother, man, is like, I ain't having it.
Yeah, he ain't having it. So you gotta, you know, so I was scared to, I had to pay attention to what's going on there just in case he had a little meltdown, which he had a couple. But, you know, hopefully he grows out of it soon.
Well, we spin that as being a competitor.
He's a competitor. He's a fierce competitor.
He's a fierce competitor. Oh, man. All right. Well, good luck with that. So, let's see what else. Shout out to my grandson, Kasi, who's also going to be a fierce competitor. We're already into his dad, you know, already putting him on track, you know, for everything, basketball, he's going to be a fierce competitor too.
Yes. That's good. I like
and
it.
And a billionaire.
That's even better.
How do we put him on the track to be a billionaire? What about that?
I think that you know, no matter what you do at that point, you're right.
Yeah. So, all right, everybody, listen. What do we watch? What do we have people click and listen to our wonderful program?
Yes. Continue to listen. Subscribe to us on the audio version, wherever you listen to your podcast, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. All that good stuff. We're on social media at BrosPod on Twitter, at BrosPod on Instagram. Follow us there. Follow us on the YouTube page, Bill Roden on Sports. And, you know, we'll be back. We're going to, you know, like Bill said, we'll talk more about the transfer portal in the coming days and try to figure out where that's going and where college sports in general is going, I guess.
Yeah. All right. All right, guys. Have a great thanks for listening. Have a great week. Enjoy the tournament and continue to pray more than ever. God bless.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the year is back. Get ready for Way Day. For 3 days only, May 4th through May 6th, you can get up to 80% off at Wayfair. Save on sofas and cookware, dining sets and rugs and beds, wall art, bar carts, floor lamps, ceiling fans, home decor, all things outdoor, and way more. Plus, everything ships free. Don't miss the sale to get up to 80% off everything home, even a garden gnome. Way Day starts May 4th. Head to Wayfair.com now to start filling your car.
Every home.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh! There it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.